Hey KU fans, welcome back to another episode of the KU Sports Hour here at KUSports.com. Might be a little abbreviated, might be like a KU Sports half hour because our fearless leader, Scott Chasen, is not quite here yet. He is traveling down to San Antonio. Benton Smith, Tom Keegan, Matt Tate, and Nick Krug are here. Bobby Nightingale and Scott Chasen are en route. So we decided to throw up a quick podcast without Scott. Something for him to listen to. He's driving down.
Yeah, he's bored.
Right.
He's bored right now.
Right.
He's probably talking. He's not listening.
Fair point. But we are here at the Media Hotel in San Antonio. And we got in yesterday. I'm sure you saw some of our stuff online. If you haven't, go check it out. Probably about 20 things already up there. Videos, stories, blogs, all kinds of stuff there, and we're going to keep up that pace throughout the week. But just a quick podcast to kind of kick off the Final Four week. I don't think we can talk about this Final Four week without going back first and looking at that Duke game. We didn't do one right after that Duke game, and I think it's worth talking about. Tom, where does that game rank? Bill Self said it's the second best win he's had at Kansas behind the Memphis game in 2008. Where does that rank for you in terms of games you've covered live, Kansas or otherwise? But just what a game. That thing teetered the whole time. At any point, for all 45 minutes, it felt like one side could tip one way and the other side could tip the other way. It was amazing. So where does it rank?
From intensity, from the opening possession to the end, I can't remember anything better.
Yeah.
As far as the drama of the game itself, I would rank it off the top of my head of games I have covered, I would say, fourth right off the top of my head.
Behind the Memphis game, behind Kirk Gibson's home run.
Right.
What else could I get? Behind the Missouri game at KU?
That's up there too. That's right. I forgot about that game. Yeah. So it'd be top five. But the other one you're missing, and you did get the others
not
correctly.
Not bad.
Is the USC Kansas volleyball game. Kansas was down like 13-9 and came back and won this fifth set 15-13, I believe it was, unless it went to extra points.
No, that was right. Yeah,
15-13, and sent them to the Final Four in the dog pile. It was just an incredible moment. It's so late at night, too.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, out on the West Coast. I should have known because you have written that a few times. I mean, that ranks. You've got all these amazing, MLB and NBA moments, and then stuck in the middle there is a KU volleyball moment.
I think at the top.
It definitely belongs. Is it at the top? That's terrific. Yeah. Benton Smith, what about you? I mean, you're kind of an NBA guy, so this is a college game.
I've obviously never covered an NBA game. I've been to some NBA
You've seen
games.
Charles Oakley get thrown out
I
of
have.
A game.
Yeah, I was.
As a spectator.
I was just like 20 feet from Charles Oakley when James Dolan had him removed from Madison Square Garden. So that's
unbelievable.
Yeah, that's one of my all-time sports moments for sure.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
As far as like...
Well, let me jump in. Yeah. Quick story. When I was younger, like 14, and you can picture me strapping, just beast of a man.
Wearing
at 14.
A Charles Oakley jersey.
Yeah, I used to get rebounds at 113 pounds, and when I would get one, I would beat my chest and say, there's nothing wrong with being like Oakman. Now, that was true then.
And you got thrown out of a game in high school once.
And that
spectator.
Hold my watch.
He's quietly my idol, is what I'm learning through this podcast. But anyway, go jump in. I'm sorry.
Oh, but yeah. In terms of just games that I've covered, this is by far the best one. I mean, I've only been covering KU stuff, I guess, since 2014, I think.
Yeah, sounds about right.
Or 2013-14 season.
There you go,
For me, this is the best game I've ever been in.
Yeah. For a while, there was a real rivalry between you and Bill Self, actually. Benton came on in 13-14 and KU loses to Stanford right away. The next year, Benton's second tournament, KU loses to Wichita State, just embarrassing themselves. So really that 16 run to the Elite Eight was a huge run for you, personally. And it didn't end where they wanted it to end, but at least it kind of got you off the hook. You got them back there last year, and now look at you.
Yeah, my presence really has a lot to do with wins and losses.
I think so.
Back to the Duke game. I think that was it. We were talking with Nick Krug after dinner about this last night, and he was kind of ranking. He's been covering KU, I think he said, since 05.
He said.
For our paper.
Yeah,
He was at the 03 Syracuse KU title game for the Topeka paper.
And he shot Bill Self's first NCAA tournament run at KU, he said.
Yeah,
as well.
The Georgia Tech.
Yeah, so
Elite
he's
A
basically
loss.
Shot every season since Self's been at KU.
Right, right. And he went to KU and shot a bunch then, too. So it was cool talking to him about it, too, because he had different perspective. And the games he kept throwing out as best games were you know, he mentioned that Missouri game, the comeback. He mentioned the Buddy Hield game. Yeah. That was a good one.
Triple overtime. Right?
He mentioned...
That was an amazing game.
That was an amazing game. He mentioned the Elijah Johnson at Iowa State game, where he scored 39
right.
or whatever it was.
That's the
Melvin Weatherwax
right.
game. Yeah, Nick's got a soft spot for Mel. That's probably what that was.
Melzy!
but what I thought was interesting about Nick's list, short list, and I pointed this out to him, most of those games on his list were just big comebacks. Like the Memphis game was the same thing. And
right. Missouri game was a huge
comeback.
Yeah,
exactly right.
Ohio State game was a big comeback.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, Purdue in that tournament.
Yeah.
You know, they only led for like 15 or 20 seconds that entire game, but it was the right 15 or 20 seconds. So that was interesting to me because I think this game, as you mentioned a bit ago, Tom, was not that. I mean, this game was a highly played, highly competitive, within a few possessions at most, from start to finish. And I think that's what maybe makes it special.
And when you'd get up, one team would get up 7 points, the other team would catch up immediately. That's the thing. It was, for game clock, it was tied for really a lot of game clock.
Yeah, it was weird. 8-13, it was tied.
To think about that.
That's a quarter, I mean, basically,
quarter of regulation.
That's there. A ton.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So I think to me that's what makes it stand out.
And you know what? Another interesting thing, every one of those ties was broken.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow. I did not realize that. That is such good insight. That's why you listen to KUSports.com, KU Sports Hour. But anyway, what other, before we get into the reason we're down here, any other thoughts that jump out about that Duke game? Obviously, for me, there's a
Blake
lot of...
Noman has changed this team. That's the main thing that jumps out for me.
Okay, yeah, understood. I mean, 32 points, as you pointed out on our KU Sports Extra, 13 in the second half, 13 in overtime, all 13 in overtime.
Unbelievable.
Remarkable. Best game you've seen him play by far.
Yeah, definitely.
Ben, you just posted a blog with his interview with Katz. Is that what he said, top of his list?
Oh, yeah, easily. I mean, Andy Katz basically asked him, you know, you were this highly recruited McDonald's All-American, top 10 player in the country in high school. Where does this Duke game rank for you? And he's like, oh, easily, number one.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Might have been close.
Yeah, good answer.
Yeah.
Malik's pretty cool. He's a pretty cool customer. I mean, it wouldn't have surprised me if he was like, yeah, it's, you know, it's one of the best, but good for him for being honest, because this is what it's about. This is what you dream about.
Yeah, it's one thing to even do something like that in the tournament, but to do it in the Elite Eight against Duke just makes it stand out even more.
Forget it. Yeah, no doubt. I think all those things are legit for sure. But I think when I think back about this game 10 years from now, I really will probably think about Svi first. I think his defense on Bagley was so just incredible. And he just competed. He got a double-double, the first of his career. He was tough throughout that game. And then obviously he hit probably the biggest shot of the game, right?
Oh, definitely the biggest shot of the game. 25 seconds left. And he hadn't been shooting well that game.
Right.
So that was kind of like in his other game in the state earlier in the year in Lincoln.
Great point.
Where he was not shooting well for like the third game in a row, and he hits the game winner, and boom, he goes on. He's been shooting well since, basically.
Yeah. He's just. I went back and looked at the video of that shot, and then still images, and it's just so fun to watch. He is such a terrific shooter. Always square, elbow always in the right spot. Body facing the right direction. I mean,
and the rotation is just beautiful.
Perfect, yeah.
Because of all the things you list.
Right.
You're going to have great rotation.
Yeah, I love that. So I think Svi will jump out for me forever. Benton?
I think partially it'll be Svi, but for a different reason. Because I thought Marvin Bagley would just torch him.
Right.
But KU had an awesome game plan for taking away Bagley. I mean, Svi definitely did a good job of... keeping the body on him and, you know, being strong when Bagley did catch the ball. But KU was so quick with its double teams, trapping him anytime that he got a catch. And Svi pressured him when he faced up. And it was perfect. That guy, if they had just played him one-on-one, could have easily gone for 35.
Right.
Like, you know, outperformed Malik Newman. But they neutralized him.
Yeah, everything about it seemed like Duke, it was most of that game, Duke was trying to figure out Kansas. KU was a step quicker on offense with its passing. There, they were a step quicker. Grayson Allen was, you know, dribbling a lot. Trevon Duvall kept them in the game.
Newman did a good job on Allen, especially that last possession.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
To not foul him is pretty hard to do. And
cool to see him dig in, too. I mean, you could see him dig his feet into the ground, get his butt low, set in. He knew that was the biggest defensive possession of his life, yep. and he delivered. Pretty incredible. I saw somebody on Twitter, some KU fan on Twitter, posted a side-by-side videos of Mason's shot in the Garden to beat Duke, and then Grayson Allen's near game winner to beat Kansas. And of course, they were making fun of Grayson Allen, saying, nice try or whatever. But it was incredible. I mean, it was the same sort of thing. Drive left, pull up. And Mason much quicker, much more of a dangerous player on the drive. So that's why he got that room in that game to take that shot. Allen, Malik Newman was glued to him, and he had to take a really, really tough shot. So
it was a brilliant move by Frank Mason to pull up.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it didn't occur to me that that was an option.
No way. Not with him.
It didn't occur to Grayson Allen either.
Right. Great point.
He was a smart player.
Played the drive the whole way, didn't he? Yeah, remarkable stuff. So anyway, impressive win to get KU here, and now that they're here, or almost here, they'll be arriving a little later this evening, 5:30 or 6, so they're supposed to get to the team hotel. The flight's leaving from Topeka around 3 o'clock, so after that, it's really on. And Tom, you've been down for a Final Four before. What do you remember about 2008 and KU getting down here? Obviously, we were in New Orleans together, but since we're in San Antonio, let's start with that one. What do you remember just about, let's see, how many Final Fours have you covered, first of all? This will be...
This is my third Final Four that I've covered, and I went as a spectator to the Final Four where Syracuse beat Kansas after Kansas beat Marquette.
So 03, 08, 12, and now.
Yeah, so yeah. Two in San Antonio and two in New Orleans.
There you go, right.
And as great as New Orleans is for a Final Four, I don't think you can beat San Antonio because of the Riverwalk.
Yeah.
That Riverwalk is like a city unto its own. It's huge.
For sure.
When you're crossing bridges and turning corners and all that stuff, I mean, it's... You know, it's like plenty big. You never get tired. You don't have to eat at the same place.
Right.
It's great. I love it down here. And you see a lot of tall men because the assistant coaches will be arriving and head coaches from all over the country. And you're going to feel really short.
That's one of the cool things about the Final Four spectacle. I remember that from 2012 in New Orleans. The lobby of these hotels is just absolutely buzzing with coaches and assistant coaches and director of operations. And, you know, it's a scene. It's almost like a coach's convention, right? So lots of people come down here. But obviously the main event is the game. And we've got a few days before it gets here, and I'm sure that's harder on the players than it is on anyone else. But, Benton, what do you think about just your first taste of Final Four life? Obviously, you haven't gotten into much yet, but...
Yeah, it doesn't feel like we're at the Final Four quite yet for me, because, you know, the team isn't even here.
Right.
We haven't been to the Alamo Dome yet. I've never been to the Alamo Dome, so... But, yeah, the Riverwalk is cool, and, I mean, it was already... kind of crowded there last night.
Yeah.
It's just going to get more and more crowded the farther we go throughout the week.
For sure. Yeah, four fan bases.
Yeah.
You know, media from all of those places. And when you think about it, I mean, even though Loyola Chicago is a smaller Cinderella type of school, they're from Chicago.
Yeah, the whole city's behind them right now.
There's not going to be any shortage of media coverage there. Michigan is Detroit. There's not going to be any shortage of media coverage coming out of there. And then, of course, all the national people as well. I mean, it's Philly for Villanova. I mean,
and this is the good guy coach's Final Four.
You beat me to it. I was just going to ask you that.
Yeah, it's amazing because you look at it. John Beilein, one of the nicest men in profession, one of the best coaches, totally down to earth.
Right.
Porter Moser. Super guy, had to be a hard guy to fire.
Yeah,
if you're Shane Zenger,
had to be a guy you loved hiring too. I mean, at that program, perfect guy to fit that program.
Loyola.
It'll be really interesting to see if he makes a jump after this.
It will be interesting to see that, because I'm sure that some schools will consider him. There's some interesting openings. A great opening at Xavier.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, you think about Xavier. Would you be Chris Collins at Northwestern? Porter Moser. at Loyola. Someone else I thought of at dinner last night that might be a good... Musselman, Eric Musselman at Nevada's got to be a hot commodity right now.
Yeah, right, right. Yeah, no, it'll be real interesting. Chris Mack from Xavier going to Louisville. 7-year deal, $4 million a year.
Great coach.
Great coach, great hire, good for him. That's going to be real fun to watch how that
had to be out. Hard to leave Xavier. It's his alma mater.
Yeah, yeah, and he's done such a great job there.
Super.
I mean, really, really impressive. So Mosier, Beeline, Self, obviously.
Right.
And then Jay Wright, speaking of Wright.
Jay Wright, super guy. Just down to earth. All four of them are down to earth, and two of them have had huge, huge success. Beeline is the third, has been here to a Final Four, been to a title game.
Right.
He's had huge success, and it hasn't changed any one of those guys, which is cool to see.
Yeah, that's what stands out to me about 2016, the KU-Villanova game in Louisville. I remember interviewing Jay Wright before leading up to that game, and you know, you ask him a question, and these guys have a million things going on, and they're trying to prepare for the biggest game or one of the biggest games of their careers. You know, there are a lot of guys that just mail those answers in or mail those sessions in. Jay Wright's not one of them, and neither is Bill Self. Jay Wright's pretty much every time he's ever been asked a question delivered a thoughtful, quality answer, and it's because he's a great dude. It's because he cares, yep, and he's engaged, and he wants to help you because he realizes that, hey, you know, I'm nothing without all this stuff. I mean, it's really a cool thing to watch him be so gracious like that, and I'm looking forward to that as much as anything about this, because he's just such an easy guy to like.
Really easy guy to like. My high school government teacher, who was my brother's basketball coach, was a Division I ref for several years. I said, "Who's the nicest big time coach?" He said, "Oh, hands down, Jay Wright."
Wow.
Of anyone whose games he refed. And
me, what do you think the context was? Nicest as far as like doesn't just rip your face
guy
off when he's yelling at you.
And I think he just knew him
beyond that.
Yeah, beyond that, and just thought he was a good guy.
Yeah,
because you know? He was at the University of Rochester as an assistant. Rochester is my hometown.
Jay Wright was?
Jay Wright was.
Holy cow.
And it probably was when, I believe it was when Beeline was at Lemoyne College as the head coach in Syracuse. You know, that's...
And now look at him.
Division III, maybe?
Right.
Yeah. Both these guys' roots and Self, you know, he started a big program in a way, but then...
Bigger than those. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he, as an assistant, he started at big programs, and then Oral Roberts was a big program, but not, you know, so he's went up the ranks too. Oral Roberts, Tulsa, Kansas, I mean, Beeline, Lemoyne College, Canisius, Richmond, West Virginia, Michigan. Just keep climbing up because they're great coaches.
Sure, that's going to happen, yeah.
Jay Wright, Hofstra was his head coaching job.
Cool.
And boom, Villanova.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great collection of coaches, I think it's going to make for a great week for that reason. I mean, these guys are all understanding of the idea that this event is so much bigger than just one game or two games or one team. It's you know, it's a spectacle of all spectacles. And
yeah, there's no false humility this week.
Right. Because
they're humble guys genuinely.
Yeah, great point. Ben, what are you looking forward to most? First one, right? Never been,
yeah,
to,
never
a,
been
Final
to
Four.
A Final Four. I've watched a lot on TV.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know if I can count.
Did you stay at a Holiday Inn Express last night?
Wait, do you remember the Walton game when he was like 23 or 24 against Memphis?
Luke Walton?
Memphis State.
Luke Walton, Arizona. Get it done.
I remember
throw
watching,
it down.
I remember watching Luke Walton in college.
Yeah.
I missed out on Bill Walton.
Man,
I
you're
might
old.
Not have been bored.
Man, you're old.
Yet. Yeah, I'm just. It's kind of interesting that Villanova and Kansas, a lot of people have kind of called it the de facto national title game at this point. But. I mean, obviously, either one of them could get upset when they advance onto that title game. But
yeah, there'll be some pressure, too.
Yeah.
Whichever team they play, they'll be the favorite, I would think.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michigan, Kansas, that's a tough call. Who would they favor there?
Looking at the lines from Bovada and stuff, it was Michigan is the second favorite here this weekend to win it all.
But
largely that, because their first game is
of
easier.
Their first round, right.
KU's a step. It's like 2.5-1 and then 3.25-1 or something. But then they broke it down farther and had it most like odds for title matchup.
Yeah.
And the odds of the title matchup that you could get were better for Kansas beating Michigan than they were for Michigan beating Kansas.
So they're shorter odds or longer
right.
odds?
Yeah, right, shorter. Yeah, so just
the, so you get a bigger payoff if you bet Michigan.
Right,
on exactly. That. Okay, yeah. So then
so KU Michigan would probably be...
KU be a point and a half favorite?
That's what I was going to say, exactly. Points? Yep, no yeah. more than 1.5 or 2.
Really? Yeah. I bet it'd be higher.
Do you think?
Yeah, so? I mean, just Kansas is just a better team.
Well, and KU would be coming off wins over Duke and Villanova, yeah, right. So that would be pretty powerful.
Yeah.
Michigan yeah. beat who, and then it'd be Loyola? Who'd they beat? Florida State.
Yeah.
Different road.
That was a fun second half to watch.
Yeah, yeah. Remember that?
I was sitting lots there when they beat Houston. I was sitting at
yeah.
You know, oh yeah. Finishing up. That was in Wichita.
Yeah, and the yeah. kid makes the shot. Just started running around the court. He was flying around. It was awesome.
He said after that, Jordan Poole. He said after that, the reason he did it was because he didn't want to get tackled. I mean, I'm sure part of it was joy, but he didn't want to get tackled.
Maybe he played running back.
Yeah, right, yeah. So anyway, I mean, yeah. Either way, I think it's one of the coolest Final Fours. You know, you love the 08 when it's all four number one seeds and all four powerhouse coaches and programs. That's cool. But you know, you've had some duds, right? And I don't think this one qualifies as a dud by any means. It's kind of cool how it broke out, actually. The left side is complete chaos and just a mess. K-State's knocking on the door over there. You know, just a wild, wild bracket. And then on the right side, you got 1-2, 1-3. You know, that everything kind of held its own over there. So I think that makes it cool in a way and makes for some fun contrasting this week just because it is two different things. But I'm with you. I mean, people can say that this is the de facto national championship. I don't like it, though, and I don't think you're hearing it as much. I mean, I think that whoever wins and advances to play that other team is going to have a heck of a battle. I mean, Loyola has played incredible basketball.
They're a great defensive team, and they're hard to guard.
Yeah, incredible. So in case you missed it, in our special section that came out the day after the Selection Sunday brackets were revealed, we had a story from Tom Keegan that said 16 teams that could win it all. He does this every year. Sometimes it's 13, sometimes it's 12. Just depends. This year we went to 16 because 16 fits the tournament, you know? So last year I think it was 13, but it was because
KU had won 13 in a row. That was our theme.
There you go.
We should have put Wilt on the cover.
Yeah, there you go. No doubt.
Number 13 of all time.
So anyway, Tom had 16 teams this year, and I think you're a guaranteed winner, right?
Yeah, all four were in it, including Loyola, Michigan, Kansas, and Villanova.
Amazing. I remember when I picked up the paper and I saw Loyola, and I was like, what? who let Keegan write this?
Yeah, why did you pick him?
Well, you know, when I'd done a story on how maybe Kansas should look at recruiting one Kansas or Missouri area player a year.
Yeah.
So you get a guaranteed 4-year guy who it means a lot to him because he's from the area. So I had watched Custer a couple times. I wanted to watch Custer before doing that story. And he plays for Loyola and is from Kansas City. And, man, they were really impressive. They just moved the ball great. And they played tough defense. I used to cover Loyola a little bit on a secondary basis when I worked in Chicago. And it was so cool to see. And then I thought their coach was impressive, so I looked up his background. Oh, that's why the name's familiar to me. Because Zenger had fired him at Loyola. He had a 15 and 16 record. At Illinois State. A 15 and 16 record, and you know, had the whole team coming back. And then Jankovic came there and elevated the program and took off for SMU.
Yeah, crazy. Self talked a little bit about Clayton Custer earlier this week, and he flat out said, that's a kid that could have played at KU, but recruiting is so much about timing that sometimes it just doesn't work out. And he talked about, you know, that was a kid who, when he looked at what we had Frank Mason, we had Devontae Graham. I mean, you know, you're not going to probably come in here and play ahead of those guys.
Right.
So,
and he ended up going to Iowa State
right.
at a high school.
Yep.
And that was the place where he wasn't going to play immediately either.
But either,
obviously,
right.
it's even tougher at KU.
At KU, yeah. Good point. So he ends up here. Terrific story, terrific season. Another Blue Valley Northwest kid on that team, right? Just a remarkable run for those guys. So, but yeah, the defense had a huge part of that, right? I mean, their defense was a big reason why you picked them in that 16 that could win it all. And I think their defense has delivered. I've been just blown away by their offense.
Yeah,
that's, so efficient, so precise. I mean,
they're constant motion.
Yeah, right. There's nobody's a liability on offense.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody can do something when they get the ball. Yeah.
First thoughts about KU Villanova. We kind of have done this a few times now, but just let's kick it around for another 5 minutes or so, and then we'll finally get a chance tomorrow to get into talking to these guys and hearing their thoughts and breakdowns and all that. And we've been sitting around the last several hours just brainstorming story ideas, and there's a ton out there, so we're going to go get it. But Tom, your first thought, what matchup jumps out at you, sort of like the Svi-Bagley matchup? I mean, is there one that you really get excited about?
Well, I think Brunson Graham would be the obvious one that is exciting. And then a tough one for KU is Bridges. Bridges-Vic will probably be the matchup. And you're talking about two incredible athletes there who can both knock down three-point shots.
So
that's a kind of the unsung matchup, and you'd give Villanova the advantage there, although Vic has been playing better.
Yeah, Vic's hot right now and confident right now.
Yep.
Bridges has had a much better year overall, much more consistent. His experience level is off the charts compared to what Vic has done throughout their careers. But Vic's hot, and he is there's no doubt in my mind that he'll be ready for that matchup, just from a standpoint of, wow, this is on me now. You know, last game it was Svi. He had to come up and find a way against Bagley, and he did. And now it's on me. I think that'll be fun to kind of get into his brain. And we talked about this, too, at dinner last night. These guys are all so much better right now dealing with us. Their quotes are better. They're elaborate.
Well, I think the reason for that is that the Big 12 and the NCAA mandate an open locker room policy.
Right.
And you can actually go sometimes and get conversations going.
Right. Instead of just sitting at a table throwing questions.
Right. And sitting at a table and there's no continuity, because the needs of TV reporters and print reporters are different. Print reporters, you're telling stories. You want the full story.
Details.
You want to continue with a conversation. In TV, you're looking for sound bites. You want him to weigh in on the matchup or weigh in on something short, specific.
Yeah, you got 3 minutes for your newscast, right?
Yeah, so. and it does, none of it's going to flow. And we want something, a narrative we want them to tell their story.
Yeah, would you agree, though? They've all been better?
Definitely, because they've got more experience at it.
Right.
There's very limited access during the season to the players. They put them at a table for 3 minutes after the game, and then they break into three chairs. Thankfully, again, they're doing that, and you get another minute and a half. But there's five or six guys around each. It's hard.
Yeah, it is.
So this, you have more time, and they're very good at it now.
Yeah.
LeGerald Vic was, you know, you put him on a table and stick the lights on him, he's very nervous.
Yeah.
And you're not going to get more than a word or two, and he's better one-on-one when you're sitting at, he's sitting in his locker and you're having a conversation with him. Newman is tremendous. Graham, obviously, is tremendous. V is very good. He's honest. And Udoka is very good.
Yeah, Silvio is really good, too, you know, for a guy that is young and just here as a freshman and could be way over his head in that area. He loves talking. He's a very personable guy.
Yep.
Loves sharing his thoughts and stories. So, really cool. Benton, your first thoughts on this this showdown? I mean, we talked about this on the walk back from dinner last night, right? This has the potential to be every bit as good a game as KU Duke was.
Yeah, potentially. Villanova might be a better team than Duke.
Right.
I mean, that was kind of my perception, at least, heading into this
right.
thing. Just a different team, you know. Duke really had some massive big guys inside that KU had to deal with, where Villanova plays all five of their guys outside, really. All five can spot up and hit threes, and that's a new concern. That's a new look that KU won't be used to. They've never played a team where all five guys can shoot three-pointers.
Sure, sure. It makes for an interesting matchup, because obviously that's a big part of KU's attack, too.
Yeah.
The over-under number in Las Vegas, it's Villanova's a five-point favorite, and that's held all week.
I'm a little surprised it's that many.
High. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Just a little surprised, yeah.
I thought 3.5 or something.
Right, yeah. But the over-under number is 155, which is pretty high. For perspective, the Loyola-Michigan game, which Michigan is now a six-point favorite, opened at 5 also. That over-under number is 128, 129, somewhere in there. So we're talking about quite a few more points being scored. What's interesting about it, though, is you talked about Duke and Villanova and how they're different challenges. The Duke Kansas number was 155.
Oh, really?
And the Villanova Kansas number is also 155.
Interesting.
So Maybe that says a lot about Kansas. I don't know.
And, you know, the thing, yeah, they both like to play fast pace.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Villanova, Kansas, and Duke all like to play fast pace. And Michigan and Loyola wear out teams with their possessions.
Right.
By passing and cutting. And they don't freak out that they're not going to get a shot off, so they're not afraid to take it right down to the end of the shot.
Yeah, great point. I think Udoka, for me, is one thing that really stands out. I mean, he's going to have his hands full on defense.
And they're going to have their hands full
with him. Their hands full with him. I think chasing a guy around on the perimeter, he's probably going to play his average. He's probably going to play around 22 minutes or so, and Silvio is probably going to play 20 minutes as well, because I think Silvio is more capable of running around on the perimeter and chasing guys, and that's what you're going to have to do defensively. But when Udoka is in the game, I think KU has to find a way to make him just an enormous problem for Villanova. However that's done, game plan it, scheme it, whatever you have to do to just camp him down there and make them handle him. If they can do that, that gives KU a chance and makes it really interesting. But it is so interesting how on one end he's a borderline liability, and on the other end he could be an absolute nightmare for Villanova.
I'm curious to see how Villanova decides to defend that, because if they wanted to, they could just go one-on-one with Udoka and say, all right,
get your points.
Yeah, right. We'll let him be their leading scorer.
Right.
And just stick with those three-point shooters.
Yeah.
Or they could try to limit Udoka, double-team him, you know, right, have a guy waiting behind him, fronting him on the other side, and
force him out of comfort. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Do they play? Kansas did to Bagley.
Yeah. Exactly. Do they play much zone? Have you seen anything?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I didn't think so either. That'd be interesting. You know, I mean, at this point, especially Bill Self, more than anyone maybe has shown this, at this point, if a coach thinks it'll work for 2 minutes,
yeah,
they do it. And it could save your season. It could change a game. What was that in the Duke game? KU went to a zone very briefly, right, against Duke, and they forced a long three-point miss.
I think it might have been a triangle in two.
Yeah, it was very brief, and I don't think we saw it again. But, in a game that went to overtime, that one possession, that one getting Duke out of character could have been the difference in that game. At the end, of course, you could probably say that about every possession and every shot. All right, well, that's a pretty good, KU Sports half hour, a good taste of what's to come. We'll do a couple more of these the rest of the week. We'll do all kinds of videos of us and of the players, and have, of course, our regular installment of blog stories, reaction, analysis, all that stuff. It's what we're down here for, and we want you guys to feel like you're here with us. So keep it on KUSports.com all week. We'll have everything you need and then some. And check back for some more videos and podcasts and all of that stuff. But thanks for checking out this episode of the KU Sports Hour. And enjoy the rest of the week leading up to Saturday's 7:49 p.m. Central tip-off.
Approximately.
KU and Villanova right after Loyola against Michigan. Should be a lot of fun, and we'll talk to you guys real soon.